Hello and welcome to the Circuit de la Sarthe, where we have just finished the 2024 24 Hours of Le Mans, and what a race it was. My name's Alexa Rundle. I'm joined by Sam Smith to bring you the race debrief, brought to you by Le Mans Ultimate, the official game of the FIA World Endurance Championship. And our headline, Ferrari have done the double, something that perhaps this weekend we didn't really see coming.
They weren't the favoured manufacturer, were they? They were talking down their own expectations. But first of all, what a race. We talk about
Incredible.
The challenge of Le Mans. This was different level. This was different level challenge. No tyre warmers. We've got tyres that are so difficult to get up to temperature anyway. And you've got these conditions. You know, you didn't know what strength the rain was coming, how to deal with it, which tyres to be on. So the fact that they actually did what they did in terms of getting up the order, I think Ferrari deserve a lot of credit for doing that.
Well, I think also maybe they learnt from their mistakes last time out in Spa and Imola, where things didn't go right for them with strategy calls. And a lot of the race, we were sat there looking at them going, is this the right thing to be doing? And this time, they just nailed their decisions.
Yeah, I mean, going onto those slicks, or staying on the slicks rather, and not getting onto those wets in that early evening part was crucial. It got them right up the order, got them some good track position, as it did the 83. They just kept their noses clean. I mean, you know, they didn't have major incidents. You know, there were a few little skirmishes out there, but everyone was in that sort of zone of really been in a risky situation. I think the basis of it, or the sort of the foundations of it, I think, really, Antonio Fuoco, in that mid-morning period before Nielsen got back in the car, he put a few moves on, the 83, and then he was able to get ahead of the Toyotas. And from there, all he had to deal with was a difficult door. But he managed to even do that. You know, he managed to get that done, and an unscheduled stop. And it could have been disastrous, but they made it work for themselves, and they got there in the end.
Where we're stood right now is actually outside of all the Ferrari garages. They're collected together in the pit lane. All of the fans have come down from the podium to try and catch a glimpse of our winners. And it's the passion of the Tifosi that makes Ferrari so special, but also the passion of the drivers. I feel like the number 50 has kind of always been the bridesmaid and never the bride up until now. They've had really impressive pole positions. They've taken our attention on numerous occasions, and they've never quite managed to pull it all together. How much is this going to mean to these drivers?
Well, we saw it on Nicholas Nielsen's face. We saw it on the guys on the floor, literally on the floor in the pit garage. The emotion was just flowing. It always does at Le Mans. But when you work so hard in these conditions and with these challenges, it's just a release to actually think, we've done it, we've got the strategy right, we played our cards right at the right time with the tyres. And, you know, they went toe-to-toe with Toyota and Caddy and Porsche. And there was, you know, that numerically, as we said in the preview, there were more Porsches out there. And the two Ferraris, okay, three Ferraris, but two at the end after the 83's issues, they got a first and a third, which is exceptional. You know, their strike rate now from victories at Le Mans is 100%. It was their 11th victory for the Prancing Horse. So, you know, those bells in Modena and Maranello will be ringing loud and proud tonight, I think.
And we do also have to talk about Toyota, because Nick De Vries, I saw him in the pen below the podium before the podium happened. He looked just heartbroken. It's never easy coming second at Le Mans. But we have to think back to this, right? That the number seven was not meant to be here. At the start of the weekend, Mike Conway breaks a rib, so Jose Maria Lopez replaces him in the car. Okay, fine, they can handle that. Then Kamui Kobayashi crashes in qualifying. Okay, they're starting last. And then Nick De Vries crashes in the warm-up, and they have to rebuild parts of the car before the race. Every single thing was against them, and how on earth did they still end up on the podium?
Yeah, there's a lot of fairy tale ingredients there, weren't there, brewing up for something special, and it nearly happened. There was that period in the last stint when you thought, oh, well, you know, maybe Lopez is going to pull him in, and there's the spin at the Dunlop chicane. I mean, didn't lose him a massive amount of time. It probably wouldn't have made a massive amount of difference in the end, but yeah, the seven went through everything. You know, the human resources of Mike been replaced by Pechito, and then that incident in the warm-up. But you know, again, a great job by Toyota. We knew they're such a well-oiled machine, very resourceful. They were always going to be in the conversation. They got a second. They got a second and a fifth place. I mean, I think in terms of the fact that they've won five Le Mans, it won't feel like a major victory. But actually, you know, they can be proud of themselves for what they did in those difficult situations. And a nice story for Pechito in what we presume will be his last race. Well, we hope Mike will be back at Interlagos. And again, get well, Mike, because you know, he'd have been watching at home and chipping in with his experience and know-how.
let's move on to LMGT3, because they really put on a show for us today. I think all of our predictions quite quickly went out the window, and it was the number 91 Manti EMA that took the victory. How did they do it?
Well, they kept their noses extraordinarily clean.
That's really true.
You know,
yeah.
If you look at that car, okay, there's the dust and the grime. It's pretty spotless, you know.
Compared to everyone else.
Yeah, I was checking with people. Did they have an incident? Did they have... No, they were just super clean. You know, I think a big shout-out goes to, let's call it the top and tail of experience. You've got Rickard Leitz in his 18th Le Mans. You know, the guy out of the 186 drivers in this race who had the most Le Mans starts, great experience. Then you got Maurice Schuring, 19 years old, his first Le Mans. I think he told me he came here when he was like 7 years old as a spectator.
There's a picture on his social media, it's really quite sweet.
Yeah, it's really good. And you know, he's done a fantastic job, no incidents to speak of. And Yasser Shaheen, you know, he's a guy imbued in motorsport. He's part of his own track in Australia, and you know, he's really started something with coming to Le Mans, and he started off wonderfully well by winning his first race here. So yeah, they just were really clean on their stints, on the right tyres at the right time, and they came through. They had some great battles, executed it perfectly, and got their back-to-back wins after their victory in Spa as well.
A bit of a disastrous day for BMW basically everywhere else, but the joy of the number 31 being on the podium will definitely make up for that somewhat. But I actually want to bring up the fact that Ford back on the podium at Le Mans with the Mustang. What a story that is.
Nice to see, isn't it? You can still hear the echoes of that Ford Mustang in the grandstands almost. A real rumble. You know, they had three cars. They got two in decent positions and a podium. I think they would have sort of bitten your hand off for a podium at the start of Le Mans week. Great job. I thought, you know, that there's some really good performances. You know, Ben Barker didn't get a result, but
Christopher, he deserved one.
Yeah, he did really well. Christopher Mees was extremely good. But, you know, Dennis Olsen, I thought, was fantastic in the night. But fair play to those guys. You know, they had a really difficult start to this programme and to this campaign, but they've got a podium at Le Mans and they'll be really celebrating it pretty hard tonight, as the boys from Multimatic and Proton tend to do.
And finally, let's talk LMP2. United Autosports finally getting that victory. And there's some really good storylines within that crew.
There is, yeah. I mean, Oliver Jarvis brought it home to the checker flag. United Autosports' second victory after their 2020 success. His experience was vital because he was actually been reeled in by Clément Novalak in the Inter Europol competition car. We were going for back-to-back victories themselves. But Ollie Jarvis was good. BJ Garg, who did a great job on his Le Mans debut as well. And Nolan Siegel, who is the third youngest, I think, the third youngest driver to win a class. Yeah, we think Julian Andlauer was the youngest at 18. And then we had Maurice Schuring as well, who won in the GT3 category. So we've had two youngsters really seeing that there's a great sort of healthy next generation out there as sports car racers at Le Mans.
Well, I also want to mention what you guys might be able to hear is a lot of cheering going on behind us, and that's from the number 183 car of the LMP2 Pro Am category. A really impressive run from them. They look like they'd be challenging for the overall LMP2 win at one point. But I think I want to bring it up because of who won the hypercar category today. That a lot of those drivers who go alongside Francois Perraudeau in the AF Corsa LMP2 car, they do really well in the rest of their careers. This is a staple point for Ben Barnicot and Nico Verona to say, look what we did with Perraudeau. Maybe Ferrari should take us next time.
Well, those two guys have got a great future in Barnicot and Veroni. You know, we saw Nicholas do a great job last year, was decorated as the champion and the winner here with TF Sport and the Corvette. Stepped up to LMP2 this season. He's racing in IMSA this year. And Ben Barnicot's racing in Japan, but, you know, he's a major talent. There's definitely a hypercar name above these garages with Barnicot's name on it in the future. He was terrifically quick. You know, they look to be in the conversation to be outright winners of LMP2, but they'll take a lot of satisfaction from winning the Pro-Am class, which will please Francois Perraudeau, who's got great success here at Le Mans in various entries before. They, of course, did a great job with that. They will savour that victory, but they would have had one eye on the overall as well, but wasn't to be. But look, if you're taking home one trophy, it's
bad.
There are a whole load of woe stories down here with people not able to take home a trophy. So yeah, good day for the pro-ams though.
feels a bit harsh to call it a woe story, but let's talk about some of the storylines of today that perhaps didn't go so well. I think the two big ones that come to my mind are the misfortune of Alpine, who after a really successful clean run all year, just had no luck, and both their engines gave out between the fifth and the sixth hour, and of course, the AF course for 83.
Yeah, it was tough for Alpine. You know, they didn't get beyond the, I think, the six-hour mark. They would have been hoping for much more, but the potential that A424 has shown...
They showed it.
They certainly showed it. Straight line speed was phenomenal. They'll take a lot from that. Mm. Obviously, in the first year of a programme, we saw last year with the Porsche, didn't we? It's tough. I thought Nico Lapierre was as strong as ever. Mick Schumacher did very well on his debut at Le Mans. I think it's a good sort of preparation for 2025, when I expect Alpine to kick on and be challenging those at the front that we saw this year. And AF Corsa with a 83 car, yeah, really difficult one there. Robert Kubica led with a good lead, actually. They'd managed to stay out on slicks and really get that nailed, and then contact with Dries Van Tor in the BMW, and the subsequent penalty put them on the back foot, and then they had an issue, a technical issue at the end, which made they couldn't get the finish. But yeah, really strong strong showing from Robert Schwartzman, FAA, and birthday boy FAA. It's his birthday today. Didn't get much from it, so commiserations to him. And Robert Kubica, of course, you know, they'll take that, they'll go to Interlagos, and I think they'll be hunting for a victory by the end of this season.
And to finish us up, I do want to talk about what I think is still very much the feel-good story of the weekend, and the Jota number 12. I think it's a real reward for the Jota team's efforts after the entire rebuild they had to do this week.
Yeah, I mean, those guys deserve their sleep tonight. I think they'll probably be sleeping for a week after that Herculean effort to get that car. You know, we saw a picture of the tub, a bare tub, not dressed, no wiring loom in it. I mean, you know, people thought they were over-egging it, saying, oh, it's going to take us a month or so or a bit more to get everything ready. They actually pulled out some unbelievable, some just incredible feats to get that car anywhere near race-worthy. To get a finish and to get a trophy for the World Cup win and finish in the top 10, you know, really close to the sister car as well. Yeah, massive effort. So well done to Jota. You know, they deserve all the plaudits they get for everything they got to achieve and get that car on its wheels and out there racing.
Thank you so much, Sam. And thank you guys for joining us, because what a couple of weeks of action and drama we have had. And the momentum doesn't stop here, because in a few weeks' time, we go to Sao Paulo and we're going to be racing at Interlagos. If you think this weekend there has been some hefty points hauls, the championship has changed completely and it's going to be incredibly competitive all the way until the end of the season. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you in Brazil.